Hi, this is 180 Degrees, a show about the changes we all need to make for a clean energy future. Brought to you by SEAI. Episode 2, Sustainable Homes.
Hello everyone, Tom Halpin here. So you may have seen a BER listed on a property when you were looking to buy or rent a house. But what is a BER? And how can energy efficiency make a huge difference to where we live? In the studio to discuss, we have architect and TV presenter Dermot Bannon, social affairs correspondent for the Irish Times, Kitty Holland, SEAI architect Jenny Power, and Sinead Ryan, financial journalist and broadcaster. You're all very welcome.
Thank you.
So I want to start by asking each of you individually, what do you think of when you think of homes in Ireland, and what comes to mind first? Kitty.
Well, I suppose when I think about energy efficient homes or warm homes, I generally think that they're a luxury, really. They're not something that everyone can aspire to have, that they're quite expensive to achieve, and really out of the reach of an awful lot. I would hazard a guess that more than half the households, if they were to pay for it themselves, would just not be achievable. I have what would be considered a good income, and there's no way I could afford things like solar panels or heat efficient pumps and things like that. So that's what I think.
Okay. Jenny?
Well, in terms of Ireland, we have a lot of old houses because we're an old country. So there's a high proportion of houses that need to be upgraded, probably over a million, sorry to be a bit pessimistic. But at the same time, I've noticed over the last couple of years that people's will is that they really want to do the right thing. They just don't know where to start. And so, yeah, I think that if we were to turn around and be able to stand at the top of the street and say, this is what you should do to improve your house, we'd have a very good audience.
Okay. And Sinead?
I have a more positive view. I'm always astonished by how far we've come in this whole area of recycling and renewable, and getting our heads around what all of that energy efficiency means. Now, we're a long way off where we should be, and the planet isn't quite saved just yet. But when you think back to maybe the 70s and 80s and 90s and even the beginning of the 2000s, this really wasn't in our head at all. It went from a domestic point of view. There were people out there obviously doing it from a climate change point of view, but from our own sakes, we weren't. And now you have 5-year-olds coming home from school saying, "Mammy, don't put that in that bin. That's in the wrong bin." You know, we're doing solar panelling in school, we're building, you know, gardens for the bees and all that kind of stuff, and they're much, much more aware of it. So there is great hope for this generation, and it's we adults and parents that need to pick up the pace a little bit and maybe lock into what our kids and teenagers already know.
Okay. And Dermot?
Yeah, I suppose I agree with Kitty. I think it is very expensive to try and make every house in this country energy efficient, but it is something that needs to happen. How long that's going to take, I don't know. I'm kind of in the sector where I'm dealing with people who have aspirations for their home, and it's always about light, it's about design, it's about more space, it's quantity rather than quality. And I think the boulder that I kind of trying to push up a hill now is that, you know, we can't ignore how, like, we're still a country that thinks of when they go to do work in their house that it's about an extension, it's about more space, it's about this, it's not about the comfort, it's not about upgrading around. And I think, I know you say we've come a long way, but I see it out there. I still see people coming up to me at exhibitions and trade fairs, and they're, "What about this piece of equipment? What about this should I put this?" They've no real understanding of the very basics of what makes a sustainable home. And actually, it's quite simple. It is about generating heat in the most efficient way that you can, and then keeping it in. It's about wearing a coat. You know, that's really what you have to do. And people are obsessed with solar panels, PV panels, wind turbines and all of this. And a lot of these pieces of equipment are all very expensive, but actually it's the very basics. It's insulating our homes. And I'll go to people and they'll have a budget to do a certain amount of work on their home. But they have only calculated to get that extra space. But like, you can't morally do work to somebody's house and then leave them the rest of the house freezing. But they're quite happy to do that because that's a habit that we've got into. And I think that's one of the biggest problems in the country, is that when people do go, it is about space. And we have just, we're starting from a very low expectation, and people expect that our house is going to be cold. During the winter, I will need to light a fire, or I'll need to light a stove. I love to have an Aga cooker in the kitchen because the kitchen will be freezing. We all have a very low expectation compared to other countries in Europe. I've travelled around a lot with TV programmes over the last couple of years, and going to Sweden and seeing how, you know, there's no elderly people with five cardigans on them. There's no huddling around stoves. They live in very comfortable houses, and they have done for a long time.
And they have freezing winters.
And they have much colder winters than we have. But we accept that that's okay, that houses will be a little bit damp and they will be a little bit cold. And during the winter, you know, it's great. And every garage now, like selling turf and selling logs as we're lighting fires and lighting, you know, it shouldn't really happen.
Mm-hmm. And Kitty, you know, Dermot talks about a degree of acceptance, and possibly our climate is conducive to acceptance. But acceptance isn't a real choice for some people because they're struggling.
Yeah, and I do wonder, you know, once the bills come in and people experience perhaps a friend's warmer house, do they not go back to their own house and go, my windows are really drafty and I really should do something about the front door that doesn't close properly? And I think people are beginning to think about, how do I get my bills down? And, you know, if the one room in particular is colder than the rest of the house, so they can't, there's something up with this room, you know, the windows must be wrong or something. But yes, I mean, people don't have a choice often about improving their homes. And, you know, I've written about pensioner couples who might be just above the threshold by literally 5 or 6 euros a week to get the fuel allowance, and not getting that fuel allowance, which is only 22 euros a week. People say it's not going to make a huge difference, but what it gets you then is access to grants for upgrading your home and for retrofitting and that sort of thing. And that could be grants from the council or grants from SEAI. So it can be a real struggle for people. And I think that, you know, kind of browbeating people and saying you must know more and we must educate ourselves and we must, it's that, but it's also empowering people to do it. And if the government is serious about really getting people to retrofit their homes and retrofit, get the insulation in, they have to make it kind of irresistible, really. They can't kind of go, this is something that, you know, you should do and here's a bit of money towards it. If we're really, really serious about this, we're going to have to make it borderline compulsory in terms of, this is a socially responsible thing to do that you have to do for your community. But also not going to leave people, you know, having to cut back on food and their social life and their relationships because they have to put all this money into their homes. It has to be something that is going to be more than affordable. It's got to be enticing and inviting, and this is something that you really want to do. I mean, if we're serious about this, this has to be something that people are just going to be really silly not to do, you know, that this is going to be a foolish and irresponsible thing not to do.
Sinead,
I couldn't agree more. As working as a consumer journalist, I find that I write a lot about telling people to switch their utility providers, their gas, their electricity, try and save money. We have the third highest energy prices in Europe, and we are the worst at switching companies. Only 11% of gas customers switched in the last year, 14% of electricity customers, and many of them are just coming to their end of their contract. We have never had more providers providing this stuff, and we import a lot of it. So the problem is that there's not much price sensitivity in the market as it is. However, if we can't get people even to save a couple of £100 a year when it's in their best interest and they have no work to do except one phone call, I wonder what the leap is to get them to retrofit and change their housing. I think the wrong way to go about it is the way that's currently been done, which is the stick approach, which is to tax people. That's the punishment for not doing it, without conversely providing an overwhelming opportunity to make it worthwhile. So if more carbon taxes and PSO levies and all that you add on, that just makes people resentful about what you're doing. And then they go, oh, to hell with it. Why wouldn't I just throw everything into my black bin then? I'm already paying for it. And that's the mindset that you get. What you really have to do is make it so attractive that the alternative, either morally attractive, as the kids are doing to us now, okay, you're not allowed to do that, it's really bad for the environment, but also financially attractive, and nothing speaks like money. So it surprises me, for instance, that there aren't, and I know the SEI is doing a lot of work, grant aiding work for retrofitting and for solar panels and for insulation works, but there doesn't seem to be, that I'm aware of, a grant, a very, very accessible grant available, for instance, to get triple glazed windows in your house. I don't know of one. Maybe there is. You know, that's a very obvious step. Lots of people like that. It makes their house look nicer. They feel good about it. They can show off to the neighbours. But yet it remains incredibly expensive to get it in. So simple measures could be done by government rather than taxing it, using the carrot instead.
Okay. Jenny, perhaps you'd step in there and just set out about that balance between the carrot and stick, you know, that there is currently a carbon tax and there is PSO levies, etc.
But we also have a suite of say, grant works available, say, in SEI ourselves. And we have several grant programmes tailored for those things. Now, can I just talk to you about the windows? You just said about the windows there. Having stood at, as you're talking about events, people in Ireland are quite interested in windows. They does come up a lot.
I'm sorry.
What about the windows?
And just give empty glass house and let them live in it.
Yeah, and I appreciate the triple glazing aspect, but I suppose what I would love for people to understand is that it's also about looking at the whole house, and that what you want to be doing is thinking about the ways,
Sure, but windows are sexy. Rolling out fiberglass in your attic is not sexy.
Yes, but if you've got a cold wall, and then you've got
and
a warm
cold
window
floors and a cold
and cold
roof.
Floors.
But you have to start somewhere.
I know, but windows is way
it's
up.
It's actually down the list, and it's like your walls are the most important thing. If anybody was asked me, I have a block of money to spend here, and I'm going to spend it either on my walls, insulating my walls, or putting in triple glazed windows, I'd say to your walls first,
yes,
and leave the windows that are in it. We're doing a project at the moment in Drumcondra. It's an old period house, and they don't have the budget to replace the older, they're not sash windows, they're casement windows. But actually, by running the figures and putting insulation in the right areas, by putting it into the floor and into the attic and into the walls, we can actually leave the old casement windows in the house until they can afford to do them properly, because there's no point in botching it or putting in something that won't look well. So, but we can get it up to an A3 rating.
How much does that cost now?
The windows is $5,000.
On a reasonably good income, I'm not going to qualify for fuel allowance or anything. How much is it going to cost me taking in the grants to do a 3-bedroom house that needs to be wall insulated?
Every house is different, but I suppose if you're to take, what would you reckon?
Well, again, I would take it from a low hanging fruit. Mm. Okay, take your budget into account. So say, what can I afford? Well,
now what does it cost? Because I can't afford anything.
Well, if you can't afford anything, then you start with the things that you can do yourself. So that would be one. Have you eliminated the drafts? Now, that means going to Woody's and getting a roll of draft exclusion tape.
Yeah, but you can do that. So they're the things you can do at home for a couple of £100.
But people don't do it.
But that's what I'm saying. If you start with those things first. And I remember a friend of mine saying to me, my landlord just installed my cylinder, and I'm now looking at a beautiful, brand new, shiny cylinder. And I said, it's not supposed to be shiny. What do you mean it's shiny? The landlord had put in a copper cylinder with no lagging jacket. So that was the first thing, go back to your landlord and insist that under regulations it should have a lagging jacket. And then even base things like making sure that you can zone your heating so that you're not heating your house at the wrong time.
That's really inexpensive, like thermostats on your rads.
Yeah, that it doesn't kick in if the temperature's okay. Or, you know, my own son just changed the thermostat down to 5 degrees. So, you know, or we were wondering why we were so cold, because things weren't, the temperature was like over 18 degrees. So it's just those little things. In terms of the cost, materials, I don't believe have changed that much in price over the last.
Labour has changed.
So because during the crash, labour went to zero almost. There was no profit for any developers, and now they're beginning to claw back. But the material price, I think, has levelled all the way through.
So, like to insulate a house, put in new windows. So you're insulating your floor, you're insulating your walls, you're insulating your attic. Like you're talking, and new windows, you could be talking a budget of about 30,000.
But even so, take attic insulation to insulate a 1,000 square foot house, that would be about €600 or €700.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that would be the first thing I would say to any person. By the way, you're talking about PV. Mm. Have you insulated your attic? You haven't. Okay, let's look at spending maybe the €600 or €700 on the attic first. That's like putting a hat on your head. So that's a really good approach. And then you can... I admit I'm a bit of a nerd with gadgets. I have a thermal camera attachment for my iPhone. So the way I convinced my own husband was to go around and see how badly insulated it was with the gaps. So make sure that there's no gaps in the insulation across, and don't throw the Christmas decorations on top of it. Keep those away. Clear out the attic and leave it the place that it's meant to be, which is to keep the house warm.
At the head of the programme, we talked about the BER. And Sinead, if I could bounce this one to you in the first instance, because you work in the consumer finance space and people ask you questions about budgets, etc. To what degree do you think a BER is meaningful to people, or do people understand what a BER is?
Not at all. I'd say it becomes meaningful when they have to sell their house and they realise that it's a mandatory requirement now.
What does it stand for?
It stands for building energy rating.
Okay. So I knew it was energy rating. Yeah, I didn't know what the B was.
It's like your dishwasher that goes from A to G for the house. It's become a mandatory requirement now for a house sale and indeed a house purchase. And you can't even list your property on My Home until you have that B or rating done. So that makes it both a pain in the neck. It makes it expensive and it's a necessary evil. I'm not saying it is any of those things. I'm saying that's how it's perceived. So it's something just to get over with. And then people have it and they get a C1 or a D2 and they shrug their shoulders and they go, well, I'm still selling the house.
Right. And I don't know how much of a difference it actually makes.
Not
because
to the same
I remember
price.
When we sold our house last year and the bank sent out, or somebody sent out an independent person to do a BER in it, and they gave me back to, I said, that rating is very low. My rating is higher than that because we insulated the walls, we did such and such. So I had to phone the BER assessor and
like
say, listen.
Proud dad.
Yeah, yeah. Saying, this is. And so so I said to the estate agent, I said, that'll go up by, I think it was from a D to a C. I said, that'll go up to a C. And he just said to me, it'll make no difference.
I did exactly the same last month. I sold my house and I got a very disappointing D1 rating. And it was nearly like kind of getting a pass in your leaving cert when you expected a B.
You didn't go for a recheck, did you?
I did. Well, I did actually. Well, I complained about it. And then again, the estate agent said to me, honestly, it's not going to make the slightest bit of difference. Anybody buying a property that's an executor sale or built in the 1950s, if you don't, like, they're not expecting an A, B or C rating there. You're not. You're expecting an F. And if you get it, what difference does it possibly make? Now, that said, is it a good idea to have BERs? Yes, I think the whole country should be mapped. I think we should know what every single house in every single district is, because that allows us to have then a playing field from which we can say, now what do we have?
But
I think
at the moment we should also know where people are living in fuel poverty. When we're talking about trying to get a handle on this, we don't know how many households. I mean, we hear estimates of sort of 10% of the population are in fuel poverty, but we don't actually know.
And we don't know how many state-owned social housing is coming in at a very, very poor rate, where work could be done.
And that's where, but the big problem is that even with the BER, even if people are aware of it, they understand what it means. People don't know, because we're starting from a very low base point, they don't know the difference between being in a G or an F or a D rated house compared to being in an A rated house. It's a bit like me when I started off with programs like Room to Improve. Like, nobody knew what an architect designed house looked like because there was none. You know, there was maybe five in every county, really nice, well designed architect. So we were starting from a very low base point. It's the same with energy efficiency. People don't know what an A-rated house feels like. They don't know what it's like to walk around in an amazing comfort. They don't know what it's like to get out of bed in December in a T-shirt and not to have to put on 5 cardigans. We're starting with a very low base point, so our expectations in this country are quite low. And what we need to do is to get people to experience what an A or a high B-rated house feels like. So that's, they have no aspirations if they don't know what it is.
What are the differences, Dermot, just on that? What's the difference between an A and a G in terms of energy consumption?
Well, I don't know how old these figures are, but I was looking at a thing that if you say a 3,000 square foot house, right, at an A rating is going to cost you about €600-700 a year to run at an A1 rating, and the same house at a G rating is about 11,000. So that's
but it won't cost 11,000 because the G rated house will be the heating will be turned off.
Yes,
unfortunately.
And they'll be
be cold. Yeah.
So that's to keep the house at the same temperature.
Yes.
But what it is, but yeah, you're right.
Reality,
and it's okay. It's okay to wipe the condensation off the inside of the windows every single morning. It's okay to kind of turn on a 2-bar electric heater at your feet when you're
a super surge.
A super surge. You remember them?
Yeah,
we all had
them. On your health, you know,
the air quality.
And that's
asthma in these bedrooms. And where there's mold on the ceilings.
Yeah. And I think,
and actually, the B-yard doesn't capture mold. That is
one of the biggest issues as well is that if you start and piecemeal do your home. So if you do, say, if you live in an old house and there's old rattly windows, there's a certain air quality in that because the air is coming in through your windows. You put in double glazing, right? And then what a lot of people do is they stick an L wardrobe in front of the vent, or they'll seal up the vents and they'll put a cushion or a pillow into it.
Yeah.
Then they seal up fireplaces. So they eliminate all the drafts and suddenly your air quality goes right down, and the carbon dioxide that's in the air, risk of carbon monoxide because they might be lighting a stove. Once you get to a certain level of air tightness in a house, then you need to look at your ventilation, like either demand control ventilation or heat recovery. And they all add to the cost. But like, I've gone to so many houses and people say, we've rising damp and it's upstairs, and I think, well, how does it rise the whole way from the ground up to the thing and miss out your living room? Mm-hmm. It doesn't. It's condensation, and we have and you go into houses now and they smell damp and they smell wet, and that's not water coming in from the outside. Mm-hmm. That's condensation that we're breathing.
But
it's
also, isn't it uninsulated walls? Isn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
because
I go into council flats and things, and they're. They have blocked up all the vents because they're so cold.
Yeah.
And I think it's because the walls are so thin and cold that any heat that's being produced inside is just turning into water.
Vapour, and it's going
and
to the walls.
To the coldest
so
spot
if they had
the
insulated walls, they could open the windows a little bit more because, you know, it just...
And also we have behavioural issues as well for all of us. All of us sitting here would throw our clothes on the rad to irradiate, to dry them. And that's actually the worst thing. You should only dry them on a clothes rack without any heat attached to it. Cooking, people don't open a window. People take a bath or a shower, they don't open a window. A house needs to breathe, needs to kind of evacuate.
I do
that.
Think all of that, that all of those behaviours are exacerbated by poverty, though. You know, that if you don't have the tumble dryer, you don't have the big space to hang the clothes out.
I absolutely agree, but I'd also say that people in general across the country have become slightly disconnected with what it means to maintain a house. So I'm not picking on fuel poverty homes, but I would say that a roof just can't stay unmaintained. You know, you need to clear the gutters out.
Yeah.
I don't believe in rising damp most cases. I think it's because gutters have overflowed and gone down the wall and soaked up, or there's been some intervention, more modern intervention that's hurt the house in some way and it's trapping moisture. And I don't want to get too technical, but it isn't just that we just are victims of bad weather or water, it's that we can change.
Yeah,
things.
I think there is a bit of blame has to be portioned here now to the Irish mammy, because we have we have been brought up to be permanently cold, you know, and turn off the immersion. And if that's all you do, you know, the house will run itself for about 40 years without you having to do anything else, as long as you don't leave the immersion on at any stage. But that whole thing of drying over the radiators and blocking up the vents, you know, that would have been learned behaviour from watching a previous generation doing that. So I think we shouldn't beat ourselves up too much, but it's about relearning.
I suppose vents are a relatively new thing. Like, vents are only really in the last 30 years, because before that you had open fireplaces. So if you lived in an older house, there was a fireplace in every bedroom, and if there wasn't a fireplace in the bedroom, there would have been a little gap in the wall at the top, so that allowed that. So they were all naturally ventilated without people having to think about it. And it was kind of during the 1970s when technology moved forward and we could have cavity walls and we didn't put fireplaces into every bedroom, we started to put the little room vents in, and then that's people associated that. So it is a relatively new phenomenon, because I grew up in a 1970s house. You accepted that when you woke up in the morning, your arm was numb. you used the net curtains to wipe the condensation off the windows. You put the super sair on. You huddled around. That's why we all have this association with the fire. Yeah. And because you huddled around on a Friday evening because the fire was lit and it was the warmest room in the house. And, you know, going to the toilet was freezing, you know. But we got that. That's what we were brought. You didn't know any better. And for a lot of people, they still don't.
Fire is nice, though.
Fire is amazing.
You get very nice electric ones.
No, I haven't. I wouldn't give it up.
But you can put in a really good fuel burning stove.
Yeah.
You can, a wood burning stove. You can,
again, expensive.
How much heat do you lose up through your chimney, and how much is it costing?
I have to say now, last Christmas, we gave up on our open fireplace a couple of years ago because I checked the BER and the difference it made to getting rid of it. But I put on my TV, I put a YouTube video of a roaring fire, and that was
really
fine. Yeah.
You can't warm your bum off a fire, off a TV screen.
Because you don't need to warm your bum if your house is warm.
It's lovely.
You can warm your bum off the couch.
But Kitty, while accepting, and there is a really pernicious issue of fuel poverty in Ireland, and it's important that it be considered, and it's pernicious in the rental sector, in local authority housing, and privately owned homes. And those people need to be supported, and Jenny talked about the sorts of programs that are there. They don't cover everyone, and there are people on the edge. But on the other hand, how would you counter the fact that, well, if you say 10% of the people are in fuel poverty, and let's say we even stretch that far, there's another 10% for whom these works are unaffordable. Yeah. Why do you think the rest of us aren't biting at the moment? Why, like, taking it to people who could afford it and instead either go on a second holiday this year, or in the case, Dermot, I'm sure you've encountered many occasions, they're buying a Turkish Trabatine splashback or something for 10 grand rather than...
Or television. They spend 1,000 euros on television.
So there is a genuine issue of fuel poverty, but there's also a psychology thing, might be the Irish mammy.
Mm.
Why do you think that is?
I suppose it's just not urgent enough yet. I think when there's a carbon tax is probably going to go up and up and up over the next sort of couple of decades. I think it will become a much more pressing issue. And I think the moral issue with the children being so motivated and worried and terrified about climate change. It's not just that they're kind of tutting at their parents. They're really, really exercised about it. So I think it will become more urgent. I think it's probably a mixture of cost and lack of and the kind of the hassle involved, perhaps, and that there are more pressing issues in people's lives at the moment, you know. But I do think that as bills go up, people are going to become a lot more conscious of it, and people are going to be looking around their houses and going, "What can I do? What can I do?" Because I know I am. I mean, I got the new windows in, but I think people are going to. It is going to become a bigger issue in the next couple of decades.
The next generation. I see it with my own kids, and if you arrive in with a plastic bottle, you may as well have arrived in with heroin. You know, they look at you, but that's good. But there is but they're not the generation who are building and retrofitting and
they
change.
They will be.
But we've got 20 years.
I'd say we have 15 ahead. Well, I look at my daughter who's 17, and she's going to be part of the generation within 10 years who's going to be calling the shots on this, you know. Yeah. And I have a 9-year-old son who has cried about it. I mean, he's wept in bed about climate change. He's really, really worried about it. And I reassure him by saying, "Soon, people your age are going to be in charge." I mean, that's all I can say to him. You know, it'll be okay because you're going to sort this out. You know, if we
but
can't be.
This isn't about it is about the climate, but I think really what this is about is. It's even the term fuel poverty. Like, would you hear that in Scandinavia? Probably not. Like, it's the fact that you don't have enough fuel to keep yourself warm in the winter. It shouldn't be up to fuel. It shouldn't be up to paying for a gas bill. It shouldn't be, like, our homes need to be warm enough that if you've got a 2-bar electric heater in it, it'll keep it warm. And we do need to look at our attitude at how we build homes. There's fuel poverty, but there's a whole generation of people who are living in houses that are way too big for them, and they find them hard to heat. Planning needs to be looked at in this country, and we need to look at, well, where are people living? And like, you've got families crammed in small houses, and you've got older people living in big houses, because there's nowhere for them to downsize to within their community. We don't build a range of houses. We keep building 3- and 4-bed semis over and over again. Urban sprawl. You know, so there's lots of issues come into it. But we should, like, if you look at what they do in other European countries, they live collectively. They have no problem with living in apartments. And once you live collectively, it's much cheaper to heat an apartment block than it is.
I think you're taking on one culture change too many there, Dermot. And I would like just to, I know that it's very easy to kind of bash the system that's in place and how we do things. I like sometimes to look at how we do things well. There isn't a house built now that hasn't an A rating.
This is
a generational thing. So no more than our kids who are now worried about climate change. I know it's not about climate change, but that's how you sell it. They are worried about that. You saw in the recent European and local elections, what was the big success story there? It was the Greens. Now, nobody wants the Greens in the Dáil, and they were terrible when they were there, but we want them at local level and we want them in Europe writing the laws, okay? So that's how people vote. And your kids, your teenagers, and my own children who are adults now and able to vote, that's how they're doing that. So they are manifesting that change. It is generational. Every new property that's going to be built from here on in, yes, there's some of them are too small, it's ridiculous, some of them are too big, but they're all going to have this this focus on energy. All of them do. Now, the rest is catch up. But that's where the hard work is.
The focus that's on energy, what we're missing out here is the focus on, well, where is the house? If you're still building houses, right, and we're still building a huge amount of houses and we're spreading them down from Mullingar to Thing, we're driving. There's no, the public transport isn't good enough. So if we can get people out of their cars, and the only way we'll do that is that we offer enough accommodation in the cities. I know it's a bigger issue.
And free public transport.
Well, I think these are
the things we'd need to think about. It is a holistic issue.
But we also are talking about decisions that affect all of our lives. So yes, that means flying less, eating less. It's big things. It's like saying no cars in the city centre.
On that, you know, I'm highly amused by the whole the Bus Connects project, okay, which has its huge flaws, don't get me wrong. But I'm up and down that Turn Your Car door quite a lot. And I was saying on my show recently on News Talk that, you know, you have all these yellow ribbons around the trees saying save the trees, save the trees. And they're beautiful trees. And yes, they should be saved. However, they're from the stance of these people living in large detached houses where their entire driveway is paved and two SUVs sitting there. I've been walking up and down that corridor. I am not maligning anybody who lives that way. They've made their money. They choose to live the way they are. It's absolutely fine and fair play to them. But you cannot say, I'm paving, tarmacking my entire driveway, buying an SUV, but please save this big tree outside my house. That is unsustainable.
It's hypocritical. The tree is outside their house, and the tree and tree-lined streets form beautiful communities to live in. And if we want people to live in cities, and if we want people to live in the likes of Terenure, York, Glasnevin, and Clontarf,
you need to give them bus routes to get in and out of town.
No, they don't need the bus routes. The bus routes are all bringing people from the outer suburbs in. Yeah. The people who are living in Terenure York don't need that.
That's the change they have to make. Well, then you get NIMBYism at play.
I was certainly anticipating a controversy grenade, but not from Bus Connects. Can we segue back, Dermot?
Yes,
Sinead, you mentioned about the building regs and the fact that we're now building more A-rated homes, and that's clearly evident from the BERs that we're seeing. But there's also an interesting introduction in this year's building regulations, which basically say, and they come into effect at the end of November or start of November, which basically says if you are interfering with or doing works on 25% of the surface of the home, the walls, you actually have to bring it up to a B2. Mm-hmm. Now that's a very potent stick for those who adhere to it. So What's your perspective on that, Dermot? How is that going to play out?
I don't know, because it'll be a bit like BCAR. So that's design certifiers and assigned certifiers. It'll be left to the practitioners to tell people. I'll be the person who ends up sitting in front of a client and saying, okay, so you want to put on 40 square metres onto your house, that's great, and but you know that you've got to bring the rest of it, and that's the law. I'd like to see a bit more public information about it, because I don't know anybody my age group who knows about it other than practitioners. I think NZEB is brilliant because it's a way of tackling the problem. It is pushing them into it. And I think then again, we need to look at the budgets that people may have to spend in their homes, and are they going to be pushed into spending another 50% on top of that? As an idea, I think it's brilliant. Mm-hmm.
But it equates with insulating your attic and your heating system.
Well, it probably needs a bit more though to bring.
No, that's the guidance on it from the regulatory obligations.
It depends. It depends what the wall.
And also, there's the kind of where it's economically feasible. I mean, I think the spirit of it is right, because it makes people talk about what they need to do, and I'm sure most people, once they. This is obviously the people who can afford it, that they could make a decision that they might spend less on a kitchen and put more money into something like this.
Yeah. Which is good. And getting people to focus on the quality of their homes as opposed to the quantity of their homes. Some people would just need space because they've got kids that they need to put into bedrooms and things like that. But for a lot of people, it's just to start, it's to get them thinking about it. But I suppose it's, how's it going to be rolled out? How's the information going to get out? Because it's like the design certifier and assigned certifier. It was up to us to tell them, by the way, we're going to need to spend an extra 40 hours of admin on your house to fill out these forms. And it was never explained to them or given out as information to the general public.
Okay. So we've covered an awful lot today. I'd like to conclude by just having a quick fire round, or at least a short question from a short answer from everyone. So where do you think our housing stock will be in 2050, which is the time frame for the government's climate action plan, or, you know, what and maybe what do you think is the biggest single challenge in there? So just perspectives on that.
Well, I suppose, you know, there's a breadth of incomes, you know, living in all these houses and tenure types. I would hope that there's going to be real supports to people who find this a financially challenging thing to meet these kind of obligations, and real support, not support that is just piecemeal and a little bit more stick than carrot. I think it needs to be overwhelmingly attractive morally and financially to people to meet these standards.
Okay, Jenny.
I'd echo that. Just on a personal level, I think I would see, I would hope to see that most people would be living in their homes, and they would, their homes would be, as originally envisaged by a very old architect, as a machine for living, but in the best possible way, that the house actually is delivering what it's supposed to do, which is to keep people warm, to keep them healthy, and to keep them happy by that time.
Tonight.
I think by 2050. I'm not sure I'll be around to see it, that our housing stock will be much improved. Certainly a lot of the recycling of older, poorer properties will have happened. And hopefully by that stage, we will have got over our cultural aversion to high rise, which we should now be engaging with on a very enthusiastic level.
Okay. And Dermot?
My dream for 2050 is that we're living in a more compact city with nice communities, and that we have a range of housing so that people can start off in a small house, can go move to a bigger house, and then and step back down to something smaller as life depends, without ever having to leave their community, and that we hopefully will eliminate two-hour commutes to the city, that Ireland is small enough, the population of our cities are small enough that everybody can live within, hopefully walking or a short bus ride into a city centre or an urban centre. I think I'd love to start to see us embracing living a little bit more collectively, because I think that's what will solve a lot of our energy problems, when we can shove up on the bed.
Okay, that's all we actually have time for at this point. If you'd like more information about our grants and how to upgrade your home, you can visit our website on www.seai.ie. My thanks to my wonderful guests, Dermot Bannon, Kitty Holland, Sinead Ryan and Jenny Power. Until next time, goodbye.
180 Degrees is brought to you by the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland. Join us next time, where we'll be answering all your questions about upgrading your home and talking costs with quantity surveyor Lisa O'Brien. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, and there's more at seai.ie/podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter and use the hashtag SEAI Podcast.